And then you have the doctor come in who represents those of us who are like, what the absolute fuck is on the TV now?
Spock's talking to fucking rocks again. Like, what's going on? Captain's Pod, Stardate 81-21-53.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, rumour has it her skin was sold at auction and is currently owned by Ben Stiller. It's Ambassador Dene. I'm guessing he just loans it back to you to use when you need it.
I don't know. I don't recommend my skin. Maybe my puppy's skin, because his fur is so soft. Look at
you
him.
You heard it here first. Ambassador Dene is endorsing skinning puppies and selling them at auction, Miss DeVille. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, darling. Let me see those puppies.
No, the puppies.
I do have the puppies close with me today because they have been in the trash.
Right.
And I'm assuming that they're going to be getting ill at any minute.
you haven't assessed what they've eaten out of the trash.
I know.
The trash was consumed.
Some of what was eaten, because I found massive bones of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how many bones they've consumed. Hopefully they didn't swallow anything. I had a dog once that swallowed something from the yard and it almost killed him.
Oh, poor puppy.
It was really, really, really grim. But he recovered and he's fine. And he lived out his old days.
Good.
So I'm kind of like cuddling my dog going, okay, buddy, just gotta
heck it up.
Stop getting in the fucking trash.
Dick. Well, I look forward to catching all of that on audio forever. Until then, let's do an email.
Emails.
Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. Email, email, email. That's a reference to something I don't know if I put in the episode or not, but we're in the cargo bay because this is where we do our emails now.
Did you add the echo last week?
I cannot remember. I don't think I did. I think it was too much hard work. Yeah,
okay.
There was a whole bit about we're going to be in the cargo bay, but that should mean that we have an echo because the cargo bay is echoey. But yeah, I don't think I edited my way around that. Well, this one, I mean, it's a reaction. It's a reaction email to last week. You showed quite a visceral and understandable disgust towards Leonard Bones McCoy.
Oh, no.
Because always some slack for this, as usual, which is understandable, because I haven't shown you an episode where he's great and he's good and he does cool stuff. All we saw him do was attack Spock and be a bit racist. So
such a thing as a bit?
It's a lot.
You either are or you are not.
Green-blooded hobgoblin. He's very racist. But I think one email that summed up, and the emails were all very kind. But Ken Holthauser says, good afternoon. I'm a fan of your podcast and I enjoy the episodes and perspectives immensely. But the Dr. McCoy slander is, I love this, unfortunate.
Oh,
it's
no.
So intimidating. It's like, well, isn't that unfortunate? After only two episodes, our stalwart Ambassador Dene has reached a hasty conclusion that our beloved old country doctor is a complete dick.
Hold on a second. Is he quoting me there?
Yeah.
Is a quote complete dick?
Dick. Oh, now, he does follow up by saying, I think saying kind of a dick is more fair. So we are talking about degrees on a spectrum of dickishness.
Okay. Right. Like,
not
he's
completely
not a complete
getting
one.
Slammed. Yeah.
Right.
He's on there, but not a complete dick, which is fair because we haven't seen enough of him. It's clear that he has a long-standing personal relationship with Captain Kirk. They're close friends. McCoy clearly wants to be Jim's best friend, but then this Vulcan upstart swaggers in with his logic and his droll shade, and suddenly old Bones becomes the third wheel. A perspective I hadn't thought about. Kirk and McCoy do predate Kirk and Spock.
Oh, okay. This is interesting. Okay, mm-hmm. I need more emails like this for some backstory.
Context is important. Context is key.
Yeah, this is good.
On top of that, McCoy is hardly the most dispassionate physician that ever practiced. He makes Hawkeye Peace look like a snowman. I don't know who Hawkeye Peace is.
Hawkeye Peace?
I think is he from MASH? Might be from MASH.
Are you talking about Hawkeye Pierce?
Pierce. Yeah, Hawkeye Pierce. Is that MASH?
Yeah, that's from MASH.
Yes, let's go. Look like a snowman. Spock, always dispassionate and measured, shows him every day the sort of doctor he should be. So he's getting like worked up because he's like, man, I wish I could manage my emotions as well as Spock. Is there a bit of jealousy there? What choice does McCoy have but to needle him, to burst that perfect facade in front of his beloved Kirk, to convince him that the emotional intelligence is just as important as logic? Subsequently, what can Spock do in return but ignore his foolishness and make him an even bigger irrelevance in front of the captain? Like two siblings squabbling for daddy, they envy each other as much as they admire each other. I still say Amok Time would give you a better sense of our belligerent Bones, but alas, no creature. In all seriousness, Ian and Danae, I love the show Live Long and Podspur. And he shared awesome artwork that he's done of The Good Doctor that looks beautiful. And we'll attach that to the episode description. Really, really, really cool artwork.
What an amazing email. Ken. First of all, thank you for not just hating on me, but for giving me context. I do need to say, too, though, that just because I'm saying that I 100% absolutely hate this character does not mean that this week I will 100% change my mind.
She reserves the right to flip-flop and completely 180. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I do have this part of my personality that I am working on. Not that that is something that should
this podcast
qualify
is therapy.
Me for grace or anything, but I am working on the finality of my words. I often say like complete or 100% because I'm feeling that level of passion in the moment. And I sometimes do forget to leave room for the other. So that's why you just take what I say with a grain of salt.
Well, and that's all part of the passion of the Star Trek community. Everybody has a favorite something, and it's such a passionate community. But to your point about like arguing points and making opinions, the 3-star reviews on Google don't get read. The 1-star reviews and the 5-star reviews get read. So we have this inbuilt, to quote Dicer, polarization of society where to be heard, you have to be at one extreme or another. So a movie is rarely, yeah, fine. It was either the best movie ever or piece of shit should burn. So, and that's entertaining. That's just part of what we do. But absolutely loved that email, Ken. Thank you for the additional context to provide some extra context as well. Although in the moment, I love the ambassador feeling her feelings and just letting it fly, and natural consequences will occur.
Yeah, I unfortunately am not going to like every character, but at the same time, I do like that I have a little bit more of your perspective. Mm. And it shouldn't all be on you, Captain. So thank you for spending the time to write it. What a wonderfully well-written email as well. That was really enjoyable. Thank you.
Okay, this week, Ambassador, the Monster Medley continues with the original series. This time it's Season 1, Episode 26. Now, apologies if I confuse anybody, because sometimes the episodes with TOS wobble by one in Season 1 because the pilot is technically Episode 1, but in terms of how it was broadcast, Episode 1 is actually Episode 2, The Man Trap with Kirk. So this is technically Episode 26 of Season 1, but sometimes listed as Episode 25. But yes, The Devil in the Dark, Ambassador. We're going to specify the predictions a little bit more. We still want an oddly specific prediction, which could be absolutely anything. But what kind of monster do you think that we're going to be seeing this week? The Devil in the Dark.
Oh my God, I hope it's a cave monster because they have been alluded to in Lower Decks.
Yes,
you know, caves. Like, we're always going into the caves. Mm-hmm. There's the cave monster. And I haven't seen one of those yet. And when you said Devil in the Dark, I was like, ooh, it's a cave, but maybe it's not. So we'll see.
Nice.
Could be a cave monster.
Love
this
that.
Week.
Possible cave monster. Oddly specific. Bones is racist.
Yeah. Okay, here's what I'm seeing in my mind, and I have learned to just go with it, whether it's true or not. So what I'm seeing in my mind, and I do have a little bit of context because of Lower Decks pointing this out so strongly. I'm seeing phasers aimed. Phasers fired. It's not working. We have to get to higher ground.
Oh, phasers aimed. Phasers fired. It's not working. We have to get to higher ground. Love it.
Yeah. So like they have to go from the level that they are on up onto like a ledge or something higher to get away from this creature.
So it's like a retreat situation.
Mm. Yeah. And I'm seeing goopy in my mind, but I don't know if that's because on Lower Decks it was goopy. You know what I mean?
Goopy. Okay. So we'll put that in the big prediction. Goopy cave monster.
Okay, sure. A goopy cave monster.
Amazing.
Very drippy.
I'm excited to get into some more TOS. We'll see you guys in 10 Forward for a full debrief. we're heading over to the holodeck. Oh, by the way, Ambassador, I forgot to tell you that we're going to start using the original series transporter for this episode and at least next week, just to be authentic. How do you feel about using a transporter that's 100 years older than the one we've been using?
I'm walking.
Excellent. Two to beam out.
No! No!
Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator or something and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, when will I remember to update my show intro from 2.5 years ago? It ain't going to be today. Ambassador, what can I get you to something from the replicator?
Silicon, something silicon, you know?
Just something silicon, just a rock. I'm just going to get you a pet rock. This is the pet rock episode.
Oh, it's the pet rock episode.
What is I love it so much.
Popular silicon based item. Let's just see what comes up.
That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, I'll just a couple nipple covers for me.
Silicon. Oh, they are silicon. Yes. Some silicon based nipple
that.
Covers.
The first thing that I look up on it knows me well. It knows that might be something that I need.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Ambassador, I am going to, as inspired by the chat, I would like a meatball dish from Olive Garden because, I mean, what else is the Horta other than a gravy-covered meatball dish? And if you want to join us in the live show sometime, you'll get to see that firsthand. Not the Olive Garden dish. We have a lovely picture of the Horta on screen.
I do have a question. What's silicon versus silicone? Because that's something else. Is it auto-changed my silicon to silicone?
Oh, interesting. Silicone is different to silicon, I think.
Both materials are widely used. Both contain silicon, and they are almost spelled the same, but there are significant differences based on two. To make a long story short, silicon is an element, and silicones are polymers containing silicon and oxygen, and often carbon and hydrogen as well. Well, what the fuck am I supposed to do with that?
Well, now I feel fully educated.
Thank you, Google, for giving me the quick description from machinedesign.com.
Well, now that that's out of the way, give us a synopsis.
I don't know that I can do nipple covers anymore, but that's okay. Let's get into the show. Okay, on today's episode, our beloved TOS team has to go to what we've seen before, which is a planet that is being mined for its resources. But this time, they've gone too deep and they find the Balrog.
The Balrog?
But this time, the Balrog. The Balrog is the Balrog. A mama. And the mama is so mad because they've been killing her little babies, her eggs. But can she say that? Not until a mind meld when she learns English. Because this creature can use its caustic materials to murder or not. And has been murdering 50 when it's actually 52 for so long.
Right.
But you know what? It's all okay. Because we get to see a mind meld with a caustic creature that doesn't causticify somehow. How does it all end? Slavery.
Slavery with a fair exchange. The Horta has to agree, but yeah, no, I agree. It's borderline on, because what happens if the Horta disagrees? I think the humans are still mining. If there's one thing Pandora taught us, humans don't give a shit. This is walking unobtainium. That's a pretty great synopsis. I guess
maybe the slavery, it's questionable consent.
Questionable consent. It's kind of strong arm robbery a little bit, because I think the Horta is doing just fine without the humans, but we'll get into that later. Overall, Ambassador, did you like the episode? What were your thoughts about it?
I loved this episode.
Yes, me too. It's been, I'm going to say, 6 years since I've seen this episode. I forgot how incredible it is. It's such a great episode. It's a good reason it's up there as a classic. It's just everyone's firing on all cylinders. As a newbie to TOS, why did you love it?
Oh, man. I think it's the sets. The set designs are really fun in this one.
Caves.
You're getting to see how they're going to make an interesting episode in a cave, and how do they explain away that we're crawling through perfectly cylindric the cylinder tubes, you know.
Tubing made by a creature, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they're like, clearly the props department and the sets department is having a lot of fun in this one. And then you have also like, how do we make this really interesting creature that is actually somebody underneath a rug?
No, they actually captured a live horta and convinced it to work for them in exchange for yummy minerals.
Yeah, yeah.
Pay no attention to the man under the horta.
And yeah, I think it's interesting. It's like the story of finding out that a creature is a intelligent creature that it just can't communicate, which, you know, I've got a lot of questions about that too. Like this episode's basically, because Spock was able to communicate, they discover that this creature, all of its children are being killed, and, you know, this needs to stop because they're about to be born, and they end up saving this creature's life. And it's just like this really interesting problem solving. There's all these problems that are happening.
I love it. Yeah.
And they're having to solve all these problems, and things are failing and things are succeeding. But once Spock leaves, how do they communicate? I guess the Horta could write on the wall, but how do the humans communicate back to the Horta?
Oh, no, that's such a good point. No kill eye. And it's just like random doodles everywhere all over the cave. I was like, that man touched me.
Yeah.
He shot me with a phaser.
So there's questions at the end of this episode, but mm-hmm. I like what they're doing, because again, it's this premise that you come across a creature that you don't have anything in common with and you just want to kill them. Like Kirk wants to kill him, then Spock wants to kill him, you know, there's everybody wants to kill this thing, and then all of a sudden, oh no, we actually could work together. We just had a language barrier.
We yo-yo back and forth a lot. Spock goes from like speculation to defending it, to then fucking kill it, Jim, to we can make an arrangement with it. It's such a yo-yo of an episode. It's so, so fun. And for me, it has a proper Star Trek ending, whereas like the brawn didn't work. And yes, it could have worked, but there's another way around this that I love so much. And it has one of my all-time favorite McCoy scenes, just him loving on himself.
Whenever he's in the goop.
Jim, I'm starting to think I could cure a rainy day. He's just like, I'm a fucking genius. I just cured a rock with cement.
Yeah,
amazing.
Every scene had something fun for me to watch. Yes. So I was engaged the whole time. You
amazing.
Know, obviously, we're like going towards, but the pacing just felt kind of nice and good. And it was fun to see them like in these different sets. There's the main mining area. Then there's the reactor room. And then there's the tunnels. Then there's this chamber, and there's just these different places to kind of experience a totally different thing other than you know, the ship. So that was fun.
Yeah, this is the pacing is incredible. It's so, I didn't feel the time ticking at all. Maybe a little bit during the miserable mind meld, which I think in the 21st century we may have had for a minute, but goes on for like 3 or 4 minutes. But other than that, the pacing is so good. And for me, this is peak Star Trek. This is Star Trek dealing with a new form of life, avoiding the instinct to destroy it, diplomacy with it, resolution by the end, plus phasers, plus red shirts dying. This is just like everything, every reason for why Star Trek became the phenomenon it is, for me, is in this episode. It's such a good little microcosm of what Star Trek is.
There's a lot it's in so here. Good. And also the relationship aspect. This has my longest exchange, because we've only just started watching TOS, of Spock, the Doctor, and Kirk at the end of this episode just giving each other shit. Like, highly intellectual. Like, there's just this subtlety in the shit that they're giving each other in some ways. And then it's like, you have to know their relationship really well to be comfortable with what's happening. And I'm not. I'm not that familiar with their relationship. So like at the end of this episode, Spock says that the creature found us just as disgusting looking as it as we found the creature.
Yeah,
which is an interesting similarity between the two of us, but that the creature thought that the ears were the most pleasurable feature, the most pleasing feature, and I didn't have the heart to tell him that I'm the only one that has this kind of ear.
The only human with those ears. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Spock is like giving it to the humans just much as the humans are giving it to Spock. And that's
the
really
Horta has an incredible sense of taste and is a very discerning palate.
Yep. He's really like just kind of, but totally deadpan delivery.
Yes. So then
you have Kirk, who's like, wow, you're becoming really human, which is an insult.
Yes.
Which then Spock is like, fuck. And he kind of got like outfoxed in a way.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not going to stand for this bullshit. And he's out.
I see no reason why I should stand here and continue to be insulted.
Right. And so you could, and then, you know, Kirk and the Doctor kind of look at each other like, haha, we got him this time. So now I'm kind of getting this vibe that Spock is always getting them, almost, or not always, but Spock is, I'm working on my the complete, you know, like the 100%, you know, like
consistently earlier, is a good term. Yeah.
So Spock might be giving it to them a lot, like,
yeah,
just overanalyzing, over talking, not bringing things down to the human level, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And now here they got him. And so it was sort of like a ha ha, good zinger there, boss. So
good one. But it also has the three of them debating the problem as well. And this is also classic TOS. This is Spock has a crazy scientific hypothesis. McCoy says, you're crazy. You're living in the dream world. That can't be true. Kirk tries to find some kind of middle ground between them. And you need that for a healthy debate. It's no good all everyone just saying, well done, good job, we're all intelligent. Like, McCoy is there just taking down Spock's ideas unapologetically. It's a great little trio of problem solving.
Yeah. It was a fun episode to watch all around. Yeah. So not only the sets and not only, like you said, the quintessential TOS stuff happening with the red shirts and this and that and like the monster and all this stuff, but also a fun kind of vibe between all of the different people, because Scotty had a moment and the captain had like mini moments. Spock, they all kind of had a moment to sort of step to the foreground, foreground, including these miners who at one point just straight up club our people.
Just zero consequences for that. Like, just whack. Hey, look over there. Plonk.
Yeah.
Worst security team ever. That brings me down to like the beginning of the episode. So it opens with this incredible, dramatic, like in your face score, like doom. And the deadest man who ever deaded his way into an opening scene, poor Schmitter.
Schmitter.
Who Guys. Has never has a character been marked for death more than this man. Your first reaction was just like, yeah, he's so dead.
He's super dead. He's like, boss, I don't know how to use a
phaser.
Okay, he's not stuttering, but that's the vibe that he's giving, is I'm very uncomfortable, but for my team, I'll take it on the chin. I'll face this thing, even though 50 men have died.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. And this episode, leaning into that as well, has, I just remember watching this a few years, this was the last time that I watched it with my dad, and we didn't expect the red shirt lineup, because at this point, it's like the red shirts dying is just a thing in pop culture. Everybody, even if you don't know Star Trek, you know red shirts are doomed. And to see this lineup, it almost feels self-aware. It almost feels like a Lower Decks setup. But this is season one, where the meme wasn't there yet. People might have been talking about it, saying, oh, he's in trouble, he's a red shirt. But he's just lining up six of these poor bastards. Just like, sacrificial lamb, sacrificial lamb, sacrificial lamb.
Yes, good there luck, are sir. Three debriefs that I counted in this episode where, all right, guys, we're going to go in. All right, guys, we're aiming for the head. All right, guys, we're going down the tunnel.
Not all of you are going to make it back.
Mm-hmm.
Just brilliant.
Schmitter.
Kills me.
I feel like a really hardcore Trek fan would have a mug that just says poor Schmitter on it.
Oh, someone's going to get it.
And somebody would get it. On the back, it's just the magma rock, you know, like it was a kill count.
51.
51.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the way that it starts, it sets the scene really, really nicely, right? Like, there's something hunting us in the mines, and we don't know what it is, and we don't know where it's going to come from. And then the looming sort of shadow in the foreground of the camera that sort of attacks in some sort of way. And we're just meant to completely ignore the fact that no one is shooting a phaser at this thing, or even really trying to. They're just standing there screaming because we're told it moves really fast, or at least used to before it was shot.
But they only have the Type 1 phasers.
That's
right. They don't have the Type 2 phasers.
What's that about? That's why it's not working. Let's get into that. What is that about?
Okay. So the Type 1 phasers are those little palm things. So on the, you know, like the phaser that it looks like a gun and it has the handle on it. The black bit on top of that phaser removes and becomes a portable phaser. And that's your type one. So it's lower battery output, lower power level. I would assume easier to make and less deadly. So they can't like kill. They're just going to stun. The type two phasers are the ones that look like guns and are like a business set to kill, can vaporize things if needed.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Okay.
Does that make sense?
I get it. Yeah. Here's what you need to know. They have type two. And that's yeah. The most important thing.
Yes. The miners do not. The miners have the type one phaser and are struggle bussing. Which I'm like, why do they even have phasers then? Like, they're not going to do anything to anybody. So, yeah. But I guess the phaser type, the type two ones are like the military grade ones.
Yeah. But they do use the type two. It does hit the creature. And mm-hmm. One of my favorite moments of the episode is when Kirk and the creature are standing off against each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, every time he raises up the phaser, it backs away, but then he mm-hmm. lowers it and it kind of comes forward. And there's sort of this standoff situation. And then he's like, well, so are we gonna talk? Or, and the thing just turns around and shows it's a wound. And I literally can hear my imagination like, you fucking shot me.
You shot me in the ass. Because Kirk is like, well, what's the problem? What are we going to do here? Like, you're just going to stare at me? And it just, like, wiggles its butt. I was like, do you see?
Have you seen this boil?
The type 2 phaser burn on my ass.
It's a type 2 phaser burn.
Type 2 phaser. Have you ever been shot by a type 2 phaser, Captain? It fucking hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting. I don't even just remember amazing. The sequence of like how it got shot. I think that was so when they arrive, the other thing that happens, and this is another question I have, is they're trying to figure out what's going on. They're, you know, Spock is noticing the silicon sphere that is on the desk, and they're kind of talking about that they're everywhere, so you know that they're going to come be important at some point, you know, later in time. You can kind of assume at that point. But things are really escalated when this creature breaks into a very important room and then takes a very important item. And this is when my question is, so we're meant to believe that this creature can control its caustic behavior.
Yes, because it uses it to
has
find
secretions.
Food. The what, sorry?
The meatball.
The meatball Horta. Has, yeah, the meatball has secretions. Okay. And it uses those secretions to find food. Yeah.
Or kill.
And kill. Yeah,
it's making self-defense. It's making yeah. Very intelligent choices to kill yes. people, to...
Spock would argue it's more intelligent than humans.
Yes. Yeah. And then make a hole, go in, and then retrieve this item without destroying it, mm-hmm. which was stupid.
I don't know why it cares about destroying it.
Yeah.
It should really, just destroy it.
It really should have. I mean, obviously, the rest of the episode would be kind of screwed because everybody would be dying. There's oh, yeah. There's...
Hundreds of planets would be screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
because Danae, they have to mine the Paneum.
That's right.
The Paneum mine.
What a word. What a word that's so close to other words it doesn't have to be close to, but okie dokie.
Yep. Like Pygium. Of all of the minerals you could have made up. Yeah, I had to come up with one that rhymes with Paneum.
Great. Woo! So this thing can control when it's terribly caustic. So it's
yeah.
It's melting people to get rid of them. It's choosing who to kill, who not to kill. I think because it's listening into conversations to, you know, the big question, why doesn't it kill
I
Kirk?
I don't know.
Is lingering.
Is it? Oh, why didn't it kill Kirk?
Yeah.
Fear. Like it recognized the phaser.
Oh,
because
the phaser. Okay.
Kirk and Spock, when the Horta first appears to Kirk and Spock, they fire the phaser and it runs back into the tube. And the Horta recognize whether it recognizes Kirk and the phaser or just Kirk, it recognizes this threat and immediately reacts to the phaser. So yeah, it's pure fear.
But
like, don't shoot me again. I fucking hurt.
But it causes a cave-in when it maybe could have just... I guess it didn't think it could get close enough. Anyways, it's very smart.
Mm.
Now I'm beginning yeah. to even be more impressed by it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the time is ticking, and so Scotty comes into play to create, you know, like a little patch system.
MacGuffin to fix MacGuffin.
Yeah. It was like beer bong looking thing.
Yeah.
It was very paraphernalia-esque, you know?
I love that he just how casual he is. He's like the engineer of the flagship. And he's like, it's the worst plumbing job I've ever seen. It's a plumber's nightmare, but it'll hold, Captain, until it won't, and then we're screwed. He's like the least like official person on the ship. He's almost like talking to his buddy rather than actually talking to his captain. Yeah. It's so great. And I guess that comes with like intelligence, I think. He's like, I'm the smartest man on this ship. You're screwed without my nuclear physicist brain. And that gives me a degree of latitude.
I also liked how honest he was. This isn't going to work. It's not going to work long. And you're not going to be satisfied.
It won't be pretty. It won't be great. It'll do for now.
It'll do for now. And it does. And it's exactly what happens. So it buys them some time so that they can breathe the atmosphere and try to find this item. Why they think it's even still in existence? Did they scan and see it? I couldn't figure that part out.
I don't think so. No.
They
were just
confident
hoping
it existed.
Like, they can't rebuild it. They're just hoping that the creature didn't destroy it. And because reasons, the creature didn't destroy it. It held it hostage for whatever reason.
Which is easily something that could be thrown into the sin bucket. Yeah. But we get to the kind of middle part of this where I think it might be one of my other favorite scenes is between Kirk and Spock in this episode when I think, so interestingly, Kirk is like, we have to kill this thing. And Spock is saying, I think that there's more, this could be the final creature. We should be cautious to kill it.
It would be a crime. Yeah.
Kirk is saying, sorry, buddy, it's doomed. You shouldn't be surprised. Did you see the last episode of Captain's Pod? You know I'm a murder hobo.
Bastard. Like, absolute bastard. Picard wouldn't do this. Kirk's just like, kill it. I'm not losing anyone
else.
I don't care if it's the last of its kind. It's gone.
Could be a great ally for us. Don't give a shit. Killing people.
It's dead. Not even going to try to communicate.
And then they give the next debrief to the men, and Spock informs the men that they need to try to keep it alive.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk is surprised by this. I didn't say that. Spock had taken liberty to try to buy some time for this creature, apparently. And so the next kind of beat of this scene between them is Kirk saying, you need to go hang out with Scotty. And
yes.
I thought that Spock was getting in trouble.
I'm really glad you mentioned this. It's the most confusing bit of the episode for me because it feels like Kirk is saying, I can't trust you.
Yeah.
All of the buildup is, I can't trust you. You're going to work with Scotty because I don't trust you to not kill this thing. You're going to go against my orders. But by the end of it, it feels like Kirk's logic is actually a command choice of, I don't want to put us both at risk. Spock explains the odds and Kirk agrees. We never address the thing of Kirk saying, no, I don't trust you, my friend. And that's way more interesting to me than the odds. So I just wonder if that was like a rewrite that happened. Like, they didn't want Kirk to be at odds with Spock like that. It's really interesting.
It was interesting. And Kirk does this thing that he did last episode where by the end he flips and he turns from the murder guy into the savior guy. And this just apparently is a character trait that maybe comes up more frequently down the line. I'm curious to kind of look out for it because we, the audience, might be believing that Kirk is going to kill it and we want it to live. And then the big turn at the end is that Kirk decides to save it and he's the savior of the day. But in this case, then Spock flips and he wants to kill it, as we've already mentioned. But thankfully, Kirk doesn't. And we find out that this is an ally, et cetera, et cetera. But my point is that particular scene back and forth where Spock is essentially like, dude, why are you sending me to be with Scotty?
Don't you sideline me. He's a nuclear physicist. He doesn't need me.
And Kirk, he says, well, it's for the command reasons. I can't risk you being a part of this. And then Spock comes up with this math equation.
How? Where does this number come from?
How? And it's like,
how many variables are you taking into account, Spock, to come up with 2,000 whatever to one?
Yeah, that's another mug. If there's a if there's a series of mugs from this episode, the next mug/t-shirt is just going to be like that particular number. Let me see, because I wrote it down because I was really, it was like 0.3 or something.
Well, I just know 0.7. Some writer is pulling that out of their ass.
2,228.7 7-1 odds that they will both be killed. And then Kirk is sort of like grins and he says, okay, so logically you should stay. And then Spock says, okay, I'll stay. And I wonder if, because on record, he wants to say that it was for command reasons, but personally, it's because he was upset that Spock had, you know, gone against his wishes. Anyway, that was a little unclear. You're right.
It's so interesting how it goes from Spock undermining Kirk or picking his own route to Kirk sidelining him. And I wonder if they are completely separate. Because sometimes when you write things down on paper, it's not until you see it on screen that you're like, oh yeah, that there was a bigger beat between those conversations. But when we're watching it, that follows on immediately. So I'd love to know if that was deliberate or not.
It's I thought it was an interesting glimpse into Kirk correcting a member of his crew for going against what he had said. So, but anyways, it was, I really love that scene when Kirk basically is going, oh, so this is how it's 2,228.7 to one odds that I'm also going to die if you die. Okay. Yes, I'll take that odd. Come along with me.
That's okay. That's fine. The great thing about Spock's flip flop as well is, and this is why I love Ethan Peck's portrayal of Spock, and I never worry when we get the Vulcans are being too emotional thing. Spock is emotional. Spock does care, because he flip-flops as soon as he realizes that Kirk is face to face with this creature, his buddy, his captain. Odds are he's gonna die. Spock flip-flops immediately and says, kill it, you can't take the risk, Jim. Kill that thing right now. Like, I don't care if it's the last of its species. I'm not going to let it kill you. Yeah. I'm not going to risk you. And that, it's so interesting. I don't know if it's logical. I don't know
if it's
intentional. You would say the Vulcan logic behind it, or if it's intentional. But it's hard to not see some feeling behind that and some passion. It's a really cool moment.
They end up finding this creature, and not only are they able to communicate with this, is like the next big kind of beat is the finding of the creature, the standoff, the conversation, and Spock mind melding by not touching. Question. How often does that happen? I thought he had to touch, but maybe I'm like just remembering incorrectly.
Yeah. So generally speaking, from TNG Voyager onwards, mind melds are touch.
He now, does Vulcans touch and doesn't get eventually any caustic damage, but he does touch later, but not at first. At first, it's kind of like a distance thing.
Exactly. And 99.9% of mind melds do the hand finger touch on the face thing. Vulcans can be telepathic. They can speak telepathically. They have telepathic powers.
I want to remember all of these things. Okay, new merch item for this episode. Just a list of all the cool shit Spock can do.
Right. So they can talk to Beta Zeds. They can talk to each other mentally. It's this thing of TOS. So this is like an empathic thing. So Spock can get close to it and kind of feel its aura, but to get more detailed and to do the real mind meld stuff, he has to touch it. So they're still feeling out what the mind meld is at this point. It's not the first time we see it, but they're still establishing some rules. So I kind of put it up to TOS doing what the story needs it to do rather than the rigid rules that we kind of have today.
It has worked for me. I really loved how it was performed. You know, you're asking Nimoy to just like experience this creature's pain, and I didn't really feel like he broke character in a way where they had to cut away a lot or something. Like, I was really intrigued to watch him bring this particular part of this character to life, this Spock character who can have all of these cool fucking powers and shit, but then it also comes with the side effect of being inundated with thoughts and feelings and memories and stuff. It's not like it'd be fun. You know, it's like when I've talked to people who said that they can see dead people. The first time I ever talked to someone who said that they could see dead people, I was like, whoa, that must be so fucking cool. And then you see their face, you're like, that's not cool. I don't like it.
It's not cool. I don't like it.
You can mind meld? That's amazing. Oh, it's serious. Oh, okay.
So sorry. Well, I love that Kirk is really sensitive to it as well. He's like, I know this is an intrusion and this is a very personal, like, breaking down of your barriers, but I don't know what else we're going to do other than kill this thing. Like, I love how he's aware of what the mind meld does to Spock as well.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really fun.
And it's interesting, too, to think, like, in the sphere of this show, this being the original series, this being season one, you telling me that they're still kind of feeling out these powers and how they work and how they're going to translate on screen, to watch him have this complicated conversation with a a meatball creature, as we're calling it this episode. Thank you, chat, once again for that.
Yeah.
Because once you see it, you cannot unsee it. It does look like a spicy meatball. Undulating.
Nice gravy running down it as
a
well.
A little undulating, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's a really interesting idea, you know, that you're learning the complexity of a creature that doesn't have the same way of communicating. And then all of a sudden it shows his intellect by saying, like, don't fucking kill me, man. Like,
yeah, quit it.
Stop shooting me. I'm dying already. You've already done it.
The end is near. Yeah. Eternity is over.
And that's like a slow reveal, too, that it's dying.
Yes. I love the metaphors and the words that it reaches for. My favorite one is the Chamber of Tomorrow. So when they're asking to get the MacGuffin back that they need for the mining drill or whatever it is, it says go through the chamber into the chamber, go through the tunnel into the Chamber of Tomorrow. And Chamber of Tomorrow, that's where the eggs are. That is tomorrow. Like, that's the word that it's reaching for, is this is my future, and this is where we put the future. It's so great. I love that metaphorical reach for words. So good. Because it wouldn't just be talking in English. It's got to pull from Spock's brain, or Spock has to interpret the
right
emotions and feelings and then put it into words that can be understood. It's so, so clever.
And then Kirk, who is kind of like watching this happen, and he's curious and invested and hoping that his buddy is going to be okay, is there. And then you have the doctor come in, who represents those of us who are like, what the absolute fuck is on the TV now?
What's going on? Go for all the names. McCoy is great for that. He walks in, and the way that he says, what's Spock doing? It's like, this is every Tuesday. It's like, Spock's talking to fucking rocks again. Like, what's going on? Why is he licking the cave? Like, is this just another day for Spock?
And Kirk, whose approach to the doctor being the doctor is, he saves people, here's a patient, do your fucking job, just try.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a little scanner, like, okie dokie, I'm just going to do some scanning now.
The worst thing is that he's right. It works. He does find a way to heal it. And it's just like, this shouldn't have worked. Like, you're asking the right... This is like, you have a friend that's good at computers because they have a job in IT. Therefore, they're good at coding. They can fix your microwave. Oh, he's good at electrics. He can do everything. Like, why would he be able to cement this rock back together?
Well, you know that creature is going to have a really troublesome recovery period after having a trowel of concrete poured into it. But you know what? It's alive, and it gets to be the mama bear to all the children. So that's all that matters.
It's so great. And this is the first occurrence of a damn it, Jim, damn it, whatever, I'm a doctor, not a something something.
This is the first time?
This is the first one. And it's episode 26. Like, it's something you think has been there from the beginning, but it's this other stereotype where it doesn't come until quite late into the first season. And yeah, it's just great. I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer. Like, what do you expect me to do with it?
That's really, really funny. And he has those a lot, because that becomes a thing that even I know about, having never seen this stuff before, is that I'm a doctor, not a blah, blah, blah. So
yeah, it's so great. It's so fun. I would love to ask the writer, was that meant to be such a one-liner? Was that something you consciously knew that you could come back and use again? Because McCoy is always asked to do these absolutely ridiculous things. And I love how smug he is at the end. Kirk's just like, what's the prognosis, doctor? And he's like, I did it.
Well,
nailed it.
Do-do-do. Kind of fucking brilliant over here.
Look at me.
What was the line again?
Goop on my hands.
Apparently I could, what was it? About the rainy day or something? What was that line?
Oh, Jim, I'm beginning to think I could cure a rainy day. And I know that clip so well, because it was on a trailer for... So my dad had all of TNG on VHS, and they would always have these trailers for other stuff, saying, buy these other VHSs or buy these other games. And they did this compilation of all of like the classic moments in Star Trek, and one of them was Picard saying, let's make sure history never forgets the name, Enterprise. And it would be Riker saying, well, isn't that interesting, or something Rikery, and it has this scene of McCoy going, I think I could cure a rainy day. And it's just this victory lap of Star Trek that I know these clips before I'd even watched hardly any Star Trek.
That's
so that's just buried in my brain.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun way of the characters just sort of stumbling their way to the answer, because they didn't have a great plan. This was them going, well, let's try to put some concrete in it now.
I guess we'll try some putty.
Or, well, I guess we're going to split up and go down two different tunnels and just see what happens. You know?
There's a conversation I wish we'd heard that we only get the back end of. And McCoy is so angry. He's just like, just send it the fuck down here. Don't ask me why I need it, what I'm going to do with it.
Oh, that
I'm
would be
burying
so-
the lead right now. Just send me the thing that I asked for.
I like that too. Oftentimes, I feel like I have to, like, we have to see, like, a full conversation to understand, but this just drops you right into the end. Like, you fucking do what I said. I'm a goddamn lieutenant.
Don't ask questions.
Send me the concrete. I don't care what color it is. Green is great. Preferably lime color.
No one likes the green huts that we build anyway.
Yeah.
It's so fun. I love it.
So then we have like this kind of crescendo also where time is ticking. Kirk is looking for the thing that's going to fix it because Horta has decided to say where it is. The miners are pissed and they are knocking out the Starfleet. They're going to come in and try to kill the creature. And Kirk stands off and he's like, first person to shoot them die. Who is it?
He's dead. Try me. Say something. Fuck around and find out.
I really am liking Kirk a lot. Like he hasn't done something yet, and I know that there's been many comments that come up whenever I say this, like, oh, just wait. But I haven't seen yet from my own eyes where Kirk is like super problematic. I mean, obviously he's a murder hobo.
But he is fine with killing things.
But we talked about this being kind of more of a war situation. Like he's not a diplomat. So I had to put him in a different category. Like this is not my Star Trek experience
as
TNG.
Picard has to be an all-rounder. And Kirk is more on the frontier. He is the policeman. He is America in the 60s fixing the world. So I get it. And I'm sure there are plenty of examples, but it's more of an overall thing for me. When I put him up against against Picard, there is no competition. And that is unfair because it's 20 years later. It's a different breed of television. It's apples and oranges. It is not fair to compare the two of them, but I can still have my preference. Like Picard is a objectively better human and better captain than Kirk.
I'm having a lot of fun. This was a fun one because there were so many moments where I just got to see a little bit more glimpse of these characters.
Yeah.
And every time somebody's on screen, there's like a little bit more interest. And then also there's this thing like, oh, everybody is wearing makeup. Everybody is wearing a little bit of that dark
eyeliner
eyeshadow.
On everybody. The mining guy at the beginning. Yeah.
Kind of love that. Like, oh, this was like
great.
This was a style. This was a
fashion statement in the 2200s.
Yeah. We want to show the future by showing people wearing like dark eyeshadow of some kind. There's these interesting parts of this brand that I'm enjoying, but Kirk returns with the item, everything is restored, they're able to work it out, they're able to save the Horta creature, and then we're at the end of the episode, and I don't know, it was just kind of a really nice little TOS sort of bubble, and I don't think that this would be a bad one to use as an introduction of TOS either. This would probably go on that list.
Yeah, I was about to say, I cannot think of a better episode to introduce somebody to. Now, lots of people say like Balance of Terror or something with the Klingons or Romulans or whatever, but that's lore heavy. This isn't lore heavy. This is like, we never see the Horta again, to the best of my knowledge. You don't have to have really any knowledge of Star Trek at all, but it's a great example of how everybody interacts with each other and what everybody's role on the ship is. Say for Uhura, Chekhov, and Sulu, who are criminally underused anyway, so you're not really missing too much about with them not being in the episode. You know that Scotty is the miracle worker, McCoy is the scraggly doctor that's pissed off and arguing, Spock's the science guy, Kirk is the, whoa, pew, 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 pew. it's a great little adventure. I love it so much.
Yeah, I really had a good time. Thanks to the chat, we know that in a future episode, McCoy tells Kirk, quote, you're a soldier so often you forget you're also trained as a diplomat.
Great point.
That's interesting. So the show admits it too, and maybe that's a very purposeful thing. Is like, what happens if the captain is more of like a war captain? You know. So,
yeah. He's had to deal with.
Who knows what they do on purpose and what they don't do on purpose? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes we'll say something and it becomes this whole other world and we don't know it. It reminds me of when I was DMing my own Dungeons and Dragons game, and I would say one thing and all of a sudden that became the focus of the campaign, and it was a throwaway thing I said once. I didn't mean for anyone to even pay attention to it, but then here we are. All of us are now going to this fucking cave I referenced one time.
As humans, we are, whether we realize it or not, we are subconsciously, actively filling in gaps. So all of the world we look at around us, our brain is creating that picture, filling in gaps. So when something is fed to us, we're like, where does that fit into the puzzle piece of our life and our story? And I do this so much when I'm watching content. Like, I feel bad for Doctor Who because the Doctor says one word and I'm like, canon, canon, canon. Like, that's new, that's real. Like, for my brain, I am so tied into, that speaks into the universe because I'm so invested. And in Star Trek, this is a world to me. Like, this exists. So when you say something, that's now something that has been said in the universe and happened and is documented and is affecting history for me, even though it's in the future. Like, it's hard to not get invested in that and to like just analyze every single line that it said. I'd be paralyzed if I was writing for Star Trek. I don't think I ever want to write for Star Trek.
Bullshit.
Nonsense. I'd love it. But I would be probably way too careful about what I'm trying to introduce and what I would be writing about.
You can't control it, though. That's the thing that I'm really enjoying in this TOS, especially the season one, where they were just doing it. This was before they probably knew that they weren't going to be having more, and people picketed to keep it going. Like, this is a really interesting thing to watch, knowing what we know now, having talked to the people who were in the picket lines multiple times now, having emails from you guys who are listening who have been around from the start, who says, I was also on the picket line, or I sent in a letter. Like, it's just really interesting to go, this is what you were watching. This is what you were passionate about. These people that are doing these interesting things at this strange time in our history, and here's the fucking Doctor with his hands in goop, and we're like, more! More of this!
Look, give it to me. I want more. This is amazing. Yeah, it's so great. Couple of just behind the scenes things that were definitely emailed in, tweeted to us, mentioned in the live chat. Really, really interesting stuff. So the first one I'll start with is the Horta. And yes, that is a gentleman in a creature. The person who actually is under the Horta blanket.
It's obvious, right?
It's pretty obvious.
They're
it's on
their
remote
tummy
control.
On like a little little rolly thing, like wiggling their
snooping
arms.
Snooping backwards and forwards. Like, I wanted like a slurping noise when it moved. But the interesting thing is that the man under the suit created and designed the suit as well. And the people, I think it's Gene L. Coon, said, if you can create this creature and we like it, we'll also cast you to play it as well. So we'll pay you for creating the creature, we'll put it on screen, and you can be it as well. So you get double duty. Because he was famous for being in lots of other TV shows as, like, if you needed an ape or a gorilla, it's him. And in, like, the 60s, odds are he's in one of these monster costumes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and his name is Janos Prohasaka.
Okay, can we just stop here and just remind everyone that Ian does like to get names correct, but doesn't
really
often
do
it. We all want to get them correct.
There's no pronunciation guide here, but Janos Prohasaka is what I'm going to go with. What a cool creature, like, to go down in history as designing the rock lasagna. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was nice. I like how it had the moving kind of like magma-esque bulbs.
The lights,
like,
on it, yes.
And I don't know if he was just in there pushing them with his hands, you know, like he's kind of floating there and like moving them around, or if he had sort of something underneath that he was like pumping it with air. like a little basketball like inflator thing, and he's just like pushing it and they're all scooting around.
Oh, I love it so much. It's amazing.
Janos Prohasaka.
Prohasaka. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, live
chat.
The other really interesting fact is quite well known, is that Kirk's father passed away William Shatner's father passed away during filming. They offered to like pause and stop and find a way to write around it, and he said, no, I'm going to work through it, then I'll take some time and go and see his father. And what he said and what he remembers from the time is just how everybody pulled in together, and regardless of like whatever disagreements and behind the scenes stuff, like, we know that Shatner's quite a controversial character. Everybody kind of pulled together by all accounts and supported him, and he turns in an incredible performance when you know that that's happening in the back of his mind all the time as well. Like, incredibly distracting. So For me, it's fascinating to see somebody on screen and you can pinpoint a traumatic part in their life and that they're going through while they're on screen and while they're recording. Like, we know that Shatner is dealing with the loss of his father while acting. It's just an incredible byproduct of television and films.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So interesting.
I always think about Aragorn, you know, when he kicks that helmet and his foot actually breaks.
Oh,
and so his
shit.
Scream was both a scream of pain for the loss of his beloved, you know, friends. Merry
yep.
and Pippin are a loss to the orcs. But what's really happening is he's really just broken himself and he's really screaming out in pain, giving his all. Like,
it's just
stuff
incredible.
Like that is fascinating to me.
It's so interesting. It's like the Tom Cruise thing in Mission Impossible Fallout when he does that huge jump over the building. Do you know about this? So he does this huge jump between buildings, and because he does all of his own stunts, he lands funnily and his foot hits the wall and he snaps his ankle. He pulls himself up and continues to run and just finishes the shot. So, and you can see the in the film, you can see he is limping on this foot and he's just like, I need to keep that shot, but I now need to go to a hospital. And it shut down production for like 3 months. And it's just to keep that on film. He's just like, we're not doing the stunt again. I'm using that. And he just ran on a broken foot.
Yeah. And sometimes you run on a broken heart. And it is interesting, like, we're just people. And it's always interesting when you're so invested in content, but you know there's a person behind it. And so, yeah, I think that's true for us too, right? Like, we create content. And as time goes on and people find out about things happening in my life at that time, like, oh my God, this was all going on at the same time and we never knew. And it's because we're performers and we're putting out content. So it's kind of like the show's got to go on in some ways. Now, ours is obviously not quite Mission Possible level or Star Trek level, but it's the same thing.
Oh, I'm trying. I'm absolutely trying to get some stunts into this show, but I'm limited by the walls around me. So the last thing I just wanted to visit on was, now that you have the context of Lower Decks, we mentioned this earlier in the episode, but Lower Decks mentioning how caves are so iconic. Did you get that feeling watching this cave now and just thinking, I'm in one of the caves? This is what Lower Decks was talking about.
Well, we need to talk about our predictions, which we famously do any random order.
Yeah.
The first thing, it opens up on a cave. I was like,
let's
right.
go.
Yeah.
Your
I was
overall
super
big
excited.
Generic prediction was big cave monster / goopy. She nailed it.
I nailed
goopy
it.
Cave monster.
They fucking nailed
That's
it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got that straight away because of the devil in the dark connotations. The oddly specific one, you were close, and I knew you were close because I remember the shot of Spock and Kirk firing in tandem. The specific prediction was phasers aimed, phasers fired.
I saw
fired.
Two
it's
people
not-
shooting phasers.
Uh-huh. You saw it. Phasers aimed, phasers fired. It's not working. We have to go to high ground. So the high ground bit wasn't true.
Not true.
But you got a good chunk of that. That was quite impressive.
0.5 points
that.
For me.
Yeah, half a point for you there. But yeah, the cave thing. Was it quite exciting to see the thing that Lower Decks is referring to and do that in reverse?
I love it. There's, like I said at the beginning, just a different kind of like, there's always a mad props to props design people, you know?
Yeah.
One of the reasons I love the making of The Lord of the Rings so much is seeing how much they had to build. And it starts with something like this, where you're making rocks and you're making textures and you're figuring out how to take tarp and glue it to a tube and make it look interesting and then make it make sense, you know? It's just really fun to see the props department having a good time. And also the coloring of everything is really nice. Like, the walls look sort of lapis lazuli in a way, and then it really helps this magma creature, this rock creature, to stand out against the coloring of it all. So delightful.
From what I've read is that they designed the creature and then wrote the episode around it. So that was Gene L. Coon apparently saw the monster. They didn't have a particular thing in mind. They just said, hey, look, design this monster for us and we'll see if we like it, we'll do something with it. And he reverse engineered the episode based on the monster. It's so cool.
It's an interesting thing too, because monster creation, always easy, especially when you're not giving it any humanoid features. There's
no eyeballs, no smile, no nothing. But
nothing.
I think this thing is adorable. I genuinely think when I know that it's in pain and it's been shot and it has that big boil on it, I feel your face is proving it. I feel so much empathy for this creature. Like, it doesn't take us a lot to get there.
I can be empathetic and also not think it's adorable, because just like I think it's a little bit gross. It thinks I am gross too.
It does. And it might be because I have big ears that I feel more connected to this creature.
But monster creation fascinates me. I know I've said this before, but the show Face Off is one that I've really enjoyed, as like the development of prosthetics and how that's used in sci-fi, you know, has kind of come into play over the years. You know, we see a lot more obviously in TNG, but here the monster creation, even with like the Gorn last week, it's just interesting stuff. And the Gorn was obviously very humanoid, two arms, two legs, and a reptile
head.
What
if a crocodile was human?
Yeah.
Minus a tail, because that's too much.
This could not be more different. This is a bulbous mass.
You would imagine it would get... So this reminds... I can't remember what Doctor Who monster it was, but there was a Doctor Who monster that was rejected, and it may be the Daleks, because the Daleks are like this brain thing with tendrils coming off of it, and they said, we can't do anything with that monster, no one's going to connect to it. And then they put it in the Dalek suit that we now know, and that even it has like the eyeballs and it has the plungers, which are like arms, and that's easier to relate to. I can imagine this just being rejected, because it's like no one's going to connect to this, because it's just a blob. It's not scary.
But it's Nimoy that brings it to life. It's Spock who brings this thing to life. And I think that's a really important part of leaning heavily onto... Maybe this is something that should be thought about more in just content creation, but just trusting your audience to build in the blanks. Because we don't have to spoon feed every detail. And this is maybe something that's speaking to what you're saying about being like almost afraid to write Star Trek. Like you want to put all of it in there so that it's received the way that you intend. But this episode works because we get to build in what's going on. Like we get to assume that it's this bad creature that's super scary. But if you go back and watch it knowing what you know about it, then you're almost relating to it. And that's because the actors are doing their job. And it's just enough information that we can kind of like go along with it. And so good on this show for taking a swing at it, for swinging the bat and just taking out the Star Trek people, you know?
I love it so much. So very, very last point before we get on to some sins. Did this change your opinion or adjust any thoughts you have about Leonard Bones McCoy?
Well, I didn't really feel like he was as hateful, because I kind of expected, I didn't know what to expect. So they beam in all together as a group and they get to work. So this character isn't designed to be the ever present thorn in the side of Spock, because I would have seen more nipping dialogue and more of that behavior in any of the other scenes that they were in, and there was plenty of opportunity for that, and that didn't happen. So I liked it because I got a chance to just watch the Doctor do the Doctor's thing and watch Spock do the Spock's thing. They were very separate for me this time. And then the end of the episode, it's Spock being snarky in a very intellectual way, almost not talking down to, but had that vibe. And maybe
I don't... he's the superior being.
And this is what I'm thinking. When Spock first came out, maybe that was sort of how he was being received, is like the superior being. Like, maybe that was more of the vibe that he was giving. I'm watching Spock on Strange New Worlds. Yeah. So I have a way different perspective of this character, because I'm watching his humanoid personality a lot more than the sort of more rigid personality.
Yes. And it's so interesting to know that Spock in the future is at a point where he's been around humans so much, he's had to put some more walls up. And the Spock that we're watching is still kind of more open. So, like, some shit happens over the next 7 years that makes Spock really pissed at humans. Like, I'm done. You guys are annoying as fuck. I've lived with you for too long.
I don't know if I got, like, I don't know that I'm getting these pissed, but when he, like, when he says, I'm not going to stand here and be insulted, my thought was, wait, you started it. Which means... that I'm a little bit understanding the Doctor character now.
Well, but what's interesting is that he means that. He means being called human is an insult. Whereas if somebody called me a Vulcan, I might be complimented. He genuinely believes that Vulcans are superior, and to be called a human would be an insult. It's like if you called me a woman and I took offense at that, it would be, wait a minute, why are you offended by that? What's wrong with being a woman? Like, he shouldn't necessarily be offended. That's kind of racist in itself.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not used to Spock being so Vulcan. I'm watching Spock be more human. And so, yeah, this gap of time, like what happens to put those walls up where he so readily embraces that being called a human is an insult. It's an interesting like mind bender, but what in reality, it's that TOS introduced this character and this was sort of the identifying factors of this character traits is maybe that being called human was insulting. I would think that him being called human, he'd be like, whatever, you know, he just let it roll it off. But that's not what I'm seeing. So I wasn't really offended because I feel like, oh, he's dishing it too. And that changes my understanding of their dynamic, which is fine. It's fun to see
totally
that.
Totally makes sense.
Thank you for letting me be upset last episode, everybody. And thank you for letting me, you know, learn about the characters as
feel
I go.
Your feels. I love it.
I have to say, too, that there is a certain amount of bravery, I think, to do a show like this because there's so many people that care so much about the characters that I'm watching.
Of course.
But yeah, I'm just kind of figuring it out as I go. And I might not like the Doctor. That just might be where I land. I might love Kirk. I don't know. We'll see.
Who knows? I mean, I can't get over you loving Kirk. Anyway, we'll move on before I start sinning you. It's fine. Kirk's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine.
Kirk's fine. It's fine. Okay, with that, Ambassador, how many pips out of four are you going to give this episode?
Four.
It's a four pipper. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's easy. Four pips out of four.
This has
congrats
everything you
involved.
Want an episode to have. Yeah, four.
It truly does. That's amazing. I mean, having said that, let's sin the heck out of it. Battle stations, everyone, red alert.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brain's pain. Remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Ambassador, you go first as the lowly human.
I mean, let's just go to the nitpicky one. At the point whenever the red shirts have arrived, the phasers are on maximum. This is a big deal. They're not set to stun. They're not set to kill. They're on maximum.
Maximum.
This is different verbiage than I'm used to, but I'm with you.
It gets me. It's something that we don't really. I'm going to say not until season four of TNG, where we eventually kick into Deep Space Nine and Voyager, where they have really defined words. So the warp scale is really defined. Shields are shields. Deflectors are deflectors. Phasers are phasers. Set to kill is set to kill. Stun is stun. Hyposprays, tricorders, a unified lexicon Bible is there. Like, it's not really until the early 90s that we get that. So anything in TOS is just yep. You didn't know what it was called yet, did you?
It's
which is such a weird thing
I love
to say
it.
To the show.
I love it so much.
I love it.
So Scotty has his paraphernalia out. The red shirts arrive. We're going to go in. They're being debriefed. And Kirk says, 50 have died. And I'm like, 52? 52 have died.
We know more have died since that initial
Schmitter
50.
Schmitter matters. And that's part of the mug. Schmitter matters.
Yeah.
Schmitter. I just want everyone to take a moment and say it out loud. Schmitter matters.
Schmitter matters. If the first Captain's Pod merch is a Schmitter mug, justice for Schmitter.
I mean, I'm just saying Schmitter matters, and he was 51. And then there was another guy that died, but there's at least 51, at this point, 51 or 52 have died. And I just, that was a sin.
Yeah, absolutely.
He needs to remember. Oh,
poor Schmitter. However, my first sin is Schmitter, is that he just accepts his fate and screams instead of firing his phaser.
Everyone does. That's a big
just
sin for me
quit
too.
Quit it. Oh, my goodness. I know it moves fast, but get off one shot.
Mama Horta is fast, and she emits this aura of fear. It's like when everyone has to roll wisdom saving
paralyzed.
Throw, you know, and they're just failing it terribly.
I love it. Love it, love it, love it. Your turn, Ambassador.
I'm going to send, just like I do in every single thing that I see, an action show that requires a woman to wear a heel.
Mm.
Lovingly, in this one, the men are required to wear a heel.
Yes.
And
I was about to say, there are no women in this episode.
No. That's another sin.
Yes, it is.
All of the Starfleet has the heel going on,
mm-hmm.
Which you can see really, really dominantly at the beginning of this episode, because it kind of has a nice shot of this boot. And it is a heeled boot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Shatner needed it. He's not the tallest of people. And they do have this thing about making him taller. But I think everybody is wearing heeled boots. I want those boots so bad. My next one was listing the minerals. The head miner is like listing all of the minerals. There's platinum, there's gold, there's whatnot. And Kirk is like, yes, I'm aware of that. And the scene would be, yeah, but the audience isn't, Captain Kirk. Like, there's no reason for the miner to be listing everything that they mine here, because it's so obvious to Kirk. He's just like, yeah, I know, you're fueling half the quadrant. Why are you listing me these things? Well, because the audience needs to know, sir.
Someone has to tell us, okay?
Mm-hmm. Exposition.
I loved this moment, but
you're going to sin it.
Mm-hmm. And so that usually, like, if I laugh at something and it's not meant to be funny, I think that's probably like, it's a clue for me that there's a sin there.
Yeah, if the show didn't intend it to be funny, yes.
Yeah, but I laughed. And it is the moment when they're exploring what if silicon-based life can exist and things like this. They're kind of having this sort of conversation about, is it possible? You know, et cetera, et cetera. And for some reason, Kirk has like a coffee cup all of a sudden.
Yes.
I don't know why.
I saw you giggle at that.
It's so funny to me.
Yeah, Spock's explaining some science, and it's just this cut to Kirk.
Kirk, and he's like,
no dialogue. I'm like, I didn't know if there was meant to be a line, and he forgot it. So I was like, I'm gonna just drink this instead of doing my line. There's a really similar moment actually is deliberate, and I wasn't too sure if it was deliberate. But it's when Kirk is holding the ball. Spock is holding the ball. Kirk comes round and says, "You're fascinated by it." And Spock thinks to himself, and then McCoy, like, I just thought it was a bit of direction. Steps forward, raises an eyebrow, and looks at him. And I thought that was just a weird bit of positioning people on and making it more active. But it was a deliberate move. That's McCoy, like, rubbing his fists and, like, just getting ready to shoot Spock down again. And Spock's just like, I've already set up the Doctor enough. I'm not going to give him any more ammunition at this point in time. And it's a beautiful, like, McCoy shuts Spock down without even uttering a word.
Chat's brought it up, and it's on my list, so I'm going to go to this one next. Yeah, Spock is way too obsessed with these balls, but also touches them. So there's, like, a textbook sin. Why are you touching the thing you don't know? You don't know what it is.
Stop touching the balls.
You don't know if it's hot. You don't know if it's heavy. You don't know if
on
it's
this occasion,
somebody's
neglect the balls.
Prized item. Like, what if that was something that the, you know, mining captain guy owned that was really valuable to him, and you're just going over and just like, oh, hey, what's this? Like, don't touch my fucking shit. Don't touch it.
Just leave
this
it alone.
This isn't your space. This isn't your spaceship. Go stop touching things.
Stop it. I mean, he says it's worthless, and yet he has one in his office. I was like, well, it's not that worthless then. You must, like, think it's pretty or something.
Can I just say it's a sin? Like, how do you not know they're fucking eggs? Okay?
Well, okay, I'll address that. I thought they were droppings. It wasn't until later in the episode that I thought they were eggs. So I thought the evidence was that this creature was creating droppings, and that's how they figure out that it's a creature, because it's secreting, and these are the secretions, not the eggs.
The time when you sin this is when Kirk goes into the cave of the future, the chamber of tomorrow, and sees them all, and the miners have been mining them or cracking them or dancing on them or whatever. They're playing baseball with them, God knows what, and they look like eggs. And my confusion is what's inside of them. Like, it was clearly eggshell with just nothing. So what was inside of it?
Yeah.
You know, is it just like magically one time then something appears there? That'd be fucking cool. Like instant meatball is instant. I don't know.
Yep.
Anyway, it was like a big reveal. Like, oh, are they eggs? And I'm thinking, you guys are cracking them open. How do you not know that they're... The miners should have at least been like, oh, that makes sense, because we've been scrambling them and eating them for breakfast.
Oh, no. But then they would know. They would know. If they're eating rocks for breakfast, they would know what they're eating.
Ridiculousness.
Yeah, it is weird. I think these miners aren't the smartest people that we've ever seen. There was another, would have been a sex tape sin. Kirk is, I think it's Kirk that describes it as it's big and shaggy. Like, title of my sex tape?
Wow. Love those so much. Yeah. Those are my favorite.
They're your favorite sins for sure.
Question. Don't think this is a sin, but maybe it's just, I'm reminded of this. There's a moment in this episode when Spock basically gets like, somebody's watching us. Is that because he's telepathic?
Yeah, okay. I think so. Like, he's sensing a mind. He's sensing an intelligence. Okay. Yeah.
So he's a Betazoid-ish.
We would use to sin later on. Yeah.
Okay.
We would use that to sin like, oh, hey, why didn't you detect the Horta, but why didn't you detect the Klingon that was around the corner?
I see. Okay. Yeah.
It works for this episode.
Okay. I just remembered that happened, and I didn't know if he was scanning something and I missed it, because there was that moment when he goes over like in the background and he's just like obsessively looking at his little scanner.
Maybe he did actually detect them on the scanner. Perhaps I can't remember. Spock being Spock.
My next sin though for sure would be like why aren't people going in pairs? But then I think that the answer is that wisdom saving throws for everyone are failing, so I don't know that it matters.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, linked to that is Spock giving Kirk the odds and saying, yeah, it's 2,000 to 1 or whatever that we both die. Are those odds affected by you deliberately splitting up just because you found two corridors? Kirk's just like, well, there's two corridors. I guess we split up. Like, you have 100 people down there. You should not be splitting up and going alone. Now is your command decision to not sacrifice both of you. Jesus, Kirk. And Spock just goes along with it.
But when he swaggers away towards that tunnel, my God, what a swagger he has.
Oh, he does. He walks like he has one of those silicone balls in his pants. I'm just going to walk down this corridor like I own it.
Oh, my first time where his cadence really...
Yes! I thought about that too.
There was one... I don't remember the line now.
It's when... they're talking about the silicon-based life form. He said, yes, I remember hearing about the possibility of a silicon-based life form.
Yeah,
you have to admit there's at least a chance.
It was some form of natural something. It was some form. And I wrote it down, some form in caps, and I forgot it was about. Yeah, I heard my first cadence.
You did. It's so apparent in that. I'm so glad you picked up on it. It's like, Dr. McCoy, there's...
Some form
of life that could be made of rocks.
There was like two things I noticed. One is like Scotty, he just talks to his teeth. He doesn't really move his teeth.
Doesn't move his teeth, yeah.
He's just, and I was obsessed with that this episode. Which is why I don't even know what he was saying. I was like, wow, he's like, his teeth don't move. That's amazing. And then, of course, the cadence got me this time. But that's not a sin, okay? That's just an observation.
Are you kidding?
No, it's not.
It's a sin. Yeah, it is.
No way. I love it.
So Kirk says that planets are screaming out for a solution to this problem because reactors are starting to shut down already. There's a supply chain issue here. Like, the reactor has only just been switched off and already there
wrong.
Are planets fucked.
Yeah.
Like, why did it take you so long to get here? Or if the transfer of minerals is to the second, you've got a problem here. You need another reactor. You shouldn't have... reactors shutting down on entire planets because of a couple days delay. Like, somebody's either too slow to react or their supply chain issues are just all over the place.
Yeah,
it's
the
ridiculous.
Problem had already happened at that point in time.
Yeah, you're already in shit.
I mean, they even had like the really cool like special effects where when the Horta wrote like the "Don't kill me" line and it was like sizzling. That must have been pretty fun. Like, we're gonna just
no kill eye.
Like, how did they do the little chemical reaction on set for that to work? That was pretty cool.
Oh, I love that. We'll never know though, because it could be done in, it could be part of the upgrade.
Oh,
because this is we're watching the remastered ones. I think they're remastered in the 90s or the noughts or something.
Oh, that's interesting, right? Like, maybe it's just done in post now as an extra.
Yeah,
I wonder if anybody remembers the original or knows it well enough to remember if it's smoked in the original or not.
Because that entrance that the Horta, when it runs back into the tunnel and the tunnel is all steaming and whatnot, for me that looked too modern for the 60s, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, now that so that would be my sin removal. My sin would be, now that we're talking about the metal part, like, don't touch it. It's still covered in caustic material. Don't go through there. But then they're like, just risking going through there.
Yes.
Like, give it a minute.
Just give it a minute. It's
There's
fine.
Already an idiot inside who went in without thinking about it.
Yeah.
Just talk through the hole, you know?
It's amazing. I had one from Spock. So this is when Kirk is with the Kirk is with the Horta for the first time, and Spock is in the other tunnel, and they're on the communicators, and Spock says, "It's a, like, I'm on my way. It's a proven killer. Spock out." No, Spock out. Stay on the comms. Like, you run towards your captain, open communications. Like, there's no need to cut him off. Just stay. Just keep the thing open. No Spock out. How did Kirk die? I don't know. I hung up on him. How well does that look in your report?
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But it also reminds me of that moment. Like, this is just how Kirk communicates. He's so casual, like I mentioned the last episode. When he comes back on, he's like, yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Don't worry. I'm here. Like, there's a landslide. It's like, Kirk, Captain, are you there? Yeah, what?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm here. What do you need?
Beam down to the planet. Everyone's dead. Hang up.
Be right there. It's pretty casual.
That's amazing. Your turn, Ambassador.
I don't know how evolution should work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, because of our silliness, like, we have a silly job. You know, we send silly things. But would we try to send something about the evolution of this creature that, quote, many generations of Horta, every 50,000 years, all but one die? But then that one has to survive long enough for the eggs to hatch to be the mama bear to the next generation that then live for 50,000 years and then all but one die.
So
this is just a terrible idea, right? Like, what is going on that this needs to be their evolutionary cycle?
Let me talk to you about overpopulation. So,
oh my God, we're going to talk about the snap, aren't we?
I am not even going to pretend that I'm an evolutionary scientologist, but scientific expert.
We have a biologist in the chat, so this is great. Go on.
Let's do it. Let's go. My instinct is that the selective pressure for that, I don't know about it being a conscious decision, is that there are a certain amount of resources on the planet. So it might make sense for there to be a culling at some point. So when you farm fields, you'll alternate your fields. So there's one year where one you don't farm on at all because the earth can regrow, and then you plant it the next year. So this is a time for the planet to regrow its minerals and then sustain life again. Whereas if you keep duplicating and breeding and breeding and breeding, the species dies out because it runs out of resources. But this way, there's a symbiosis between the planet and the Horta. So that would be my guess if I was going to put some reasoning to it.
So maybe we don't sin it. Or maybe we do.
We sin it, and then just the nerd thing cuts us off.
How funny would it be if, like, Kirk or whomever it was that was explaining the cycle go, I mean, I think it was Spock, because he was the one that did the mind meld and was learning about their history. And he says, you know, every 50,000 years, everybody but one dies. And it's just, we cut in like, that is a terrible idea.
that sucks.
At least
this
two.
Works.
Just two.
Ten.
That way, if somebody gets a cold, you have a backup.
Exactly. One of them gets shot in the ass, you're okay. What else did I have? So my biggest sin of the episode is that the Horta agree to this plan. Now, the humans, fine. The logic is that the humans are going to direct them towards the mineral-rich deposits. And in return, the Horta will then tunnel into them so then the humans can get at them as well. So there's a symbiosis between them. I just feel like the Horta were doing fine without the humans. Like, and then, so this feels like kidnapping, because the Horta knows that the Type 2 phaser is going to kill them. So they're kind of being held hostage here. They don't have a lot of bargaining power. I think in TNG era, we would leave this planet and just let the Horta carry on. There's a prime directive thing here. This isn't a warp capable species. This is a species that is just in this life cycle that the humans are disrupting. And I think they're an intelligent species. We know that. There's a bit of a gray area here about, I don't think this is above board. I don't think this is okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I'm
everyone
getting
pitches
that impression.
It as a happy ending.
Yeah, and again, how do they make sure that the Horta is being treated fairly? Like, it's depending entirely on these miners who
you gotta have a Vulcan
have a lifespan
there at all times.
I mean, how long do humans live at this point? 120 years, maybe? Like
140-ish.
Yeah, so we have that amount, not even like, let's say 120 years. Let's say you come in to the mining base when you're 20 years old and you work there for the rest of your life. We're trusting that this person is going to keep the agreement that was made between a mind meld X amount of hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's going to last 50,000 or whatever. It just doesn't seem like a good idea. But you know what? We weren't there. We don't know.
We weren't there. We don't know. We're also not famous for mining responsibly. So this might be something that changes in the future. But I imagine we strip this planet dry and then leave. And then what happens to the Horta? Yeah, I think there's a lot more. This is one that I want the Lower Decks team to go back to and say, this is the update on Janus 6. The Perineum mine has been closed.
Oh my God. I don't really think I have much else that we haven't said. We have so many sins to cover.
Yeah, hang around in the outtakes for some more sins and also some science lessons from one of our listeners in the chat who dropped some science on us. Yes, one of our science officers has dropped some stuff in the chat that we're going to talk about. But yeah, anything else, Ambassador?
No, I love this episode. Highly recommend it being on the list of the short list of things that you decide to introduce your friends to when they're considering watching TOS. This would be a fun one.
Up there.
Yeah, this would be a fun one because I think the pacing is right. I don't know that I'd start with the Gorn episode. I think I'd start with this one.
I think I'm with you there. Yeah, I agree. So next week, Ambassador, I think this is going to be our last TOS episode for a little while. We're going to do another monster episode. We're going all the way back to what is technically episode one. We're going to be doing the Mantrap, which is, we had the pilot, which was the cage, but that never aired. This is the first episode of Star Trek that ever aired on TV, the Mantrap, and it does have an interesting monster in it. So next week's episode is season one, episode 1/episode 2, depending on how you're looking at it. TOS's The Mantrap. Until next time, talk to us. Drop us an email. CaptainsPod@cinemasins.com. Reach out to us on Twitter @CaptainsPodCS. Join the Discord, CinemaSins. discord.gg/cinemasins. And tell us how much you love the Ambassador loves McCoy. And until next week, I'm your captain, and I'm a podcaster, not a doctor.
And I see no reason to stand here and be insulted.
That's literally every week for you.
Okay, fine. So no kill eye.
No kill eye. Live long and pods back.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Welcome to Captain's Pod, everybody. It's going to be a new year next time we have an episode of the show. And that means that it's time for you to get your shit together. And there's only like a week left to accomplish all goals of 2023. And not only that, but prepare yourself for the imminent doom of 2024 and all of the things that have to happen within 12 months to make sure that you are on pace, on par with your peers and the professionals that work around you. No pressure, but also so much fucking pressure.
I feel like you're listing a lot of your pressures.
What are you talking about? I wasn't even close to being done yet. Why did you interrupt me?
That's a lot. You listed a lot of things. Is that just January 2024 or is that the whole year?
Yeah. Right before I sat down, the last reels that I watched is swimming in my brain. So it's this couple people who catch this weird spider in the garage. It's in a glass jar. They're tapping the counter and it's not reacting to it. But when they're looking at it through their camera and tapping the camera to autofocus, it flinches every time they tap their camera.
Interesting.
So it was a physicist, I think, that was responding to it to explain how the iPhone uses this technology. Every time you tap your camera to focus specifically, it sends out like this light ray, essentially, that evaluates the space to tell it how to focus and what
to
do.
That makes sense.
And that maybe this little critter is sensitive to that because it was like it would tap it and then it would move. And they would tap, tap, tap. It would move, move, move. So it was very specific in line.
This is so how we get Spider-Man.
This is how, that's what I'm saying. It's like, that's why it's swimming around in my brain. Like, we've got problems on the horizon. First things first, says Loder, silicon-based life forms are hypothetically possible. So bones is partially incorrect. Silicon belongs to the same group as carbon in the periodic table, and it's also tetravalent.
Tetravalent.
As carbon, meaning it can share four of its electrons on its outer shell with other atoms. However, Bones is correct that silicon-based life forms could not survive in oxygen atmospheres because silicon reacts with oxygen and quote-unquote burns. They apparently could survive in very hot atmospheres like Mercury. I mean, holy shit, you come for the cursing and you stay for the knowledge. Sin removal for arguably the greatest mind meld seen in franchise history.
Yeah, they should have stopped there. It's really pretty great.
Are they bad after this?
No, they're not bad. Actually, the best one is objectively the one in Sarek in TNG. That has the best mind meld in all of Star Trek history. But they do tend to get overused by the time we get to Voyager.
I don't know. That body swap was pretty great in Strange New Worlds. But that's not a mind meld. That's something else entirely.
That was another ritual entirely. But yeah, same boat.
J.A., who isn't here anymore, but this cracked me up, literally just came in on the fly and said, I've only got a second, nothing to do with this episode. I realized this week how the Gorn change. Like, you're like, I have to tell you this. They incubate in a brood in an augment, which results in a virus that turns S and W Gorn into TOS Gorn.
That would be great.
Anyway, I just love this so much.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Fun fact from Memory Alpha, 2 days before filming of the Federation Council scenes in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, it was requested that one of the aliens present in the setting be a Horda ambassador. As notice of the request was given so soon before the scenes were shot, however, the creation of a Horda in time for filming was an impossibility. Thus, the Horda failed to make an appearance in the film, which is bullshit because all you really need is like a wiggly carpet.
That would have been amazing, which makes me think that they destroyed the Horta.
Of course they destroyed the Horta.
Like, you couldn't use the original one. But they kept the Gorn. Link, I did watch the last episode of the Doctor Who special. I have so many thoughts. I could do an extra... I kind of want to get together with Aaron and just do a one-off one-hour show about the Doctor Who specials and maybe put it up in the Sin Club or something. I can absolutely agree that Neil Patrick Harris was an incredible toy maker. That the mask kind of inspired dance in the middle of the episode where he does I'm the king of the cube and beat, shik shiki boom, shik shiki boom. He does a version. It just reminded me of that so much. That was incredible. I want a whole season of the toy maker. I have thoughts about the ending, but overall, I'm super freaking excited for Shuti Gatwa. He's going to be such an incredible doctor.
I was going on about Kirk, and we're talking about just different kinds of things with, you know, like the militant style leadership versus, you know, like Picard. And we've got some strong opinions about, like, Picard is just as bad in some ways. And so I really appreciate you guys saying that. But here's from one from Lord Air. Janeway is a really good example of character's entire mood changing according to the episode's needs. She is either more understanding and respectful than Picard or a psycho.
So Janeway gets a little bit of a pass because, much like Kirk, it's interesting you make that comparison because Janeway is on the frontier as well. She is in the Delta Quadrant in... Ow! Contact lens, motherfucker! Ow! Janeway is also on the frontier and is just in the middle of nowhere having to make command decisions very differently to what she's been trained to do. This is also her first command. Like, she is a brand new captain and she is out there 85,000 light years from home. And in theory, yes, you play by the same rules, but she's also got to get her crew home. So I don't think it's a super fair comparison.
And genocide is okay sometimes, according to Janeway.
Yes, according to Janeway, straight up murder. Yeah, objectively, Voyager probably should have just landed on a planet rather than sacrifice so many other planets.
Josh said, Picard is undoubtedly a better human than Kirk, but when it comes to eradicating the Borg, who are innocent members of every species ever, Picard says, let them die.
Again... Yes, it gets problematic when you realize you can save people. As soon as you realize, like, because 7 of 9 has been a Borg since she was 8 or 7 or whatever, however old she was. At that point, you're deciding, I'm going to kill them instead of rescue them and deborgify them. It gets really murky after that.
I like this one from Mark. First time I watched this episode was with my dad in the 80s. I remember having the stomach flu and couldn't keep anything down. Seeing an undulating cheeseburger monster made me sicker.
Oh no. Flyboy, ruling request. McCoy, I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer. This is the first instance of an infamous trope. Sin removal for the nostalgia or sin for starting the trope? Honestly, I could go either way. It's one of those things where we'd want to acknowledge it because it's the beginning of something and it's significant. But I don't think it's big enough to be worthy of a sin removal. But I also don't really want to sin it. So I think we would sin the lesser versions. We would sin the fact that, great, now everyone's going to reference this, even though it was funny the first time, but the millions of references that come later are less so. So we may sin the future. Maybe. That might be how I would do it. Okay, let's see. We got some more science from Slab. The German word Hort, or linguistics, male gender, der Hort, means hoard, as in a hoard of treasure or supplies, derived from the Latin hortus, garden. Recently, the word's meaning is extended to include all-day nursery, a place where you hoard children, hence cognate to kindergarten, fitting after the fact the role the hoarder had. Yeah, it is a hoarder. It is inexorably linked to the hoard of minerals and supplies. I like that.
Holy shit. There you go.
Y'all ready for this? Bum, 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 bum. Can you tell me what song I was humming with because you didn't have your headphones on?
Y'all ready for this? Da-na-na.
Wait. That's right. That's what I was singing.
Oh, cool. Ian, look at this dog.
He's adorable. Look at him. Limp and dead. It's amazing.
He's not dead.
I'm not dead yet. Nope. And my tiny nipples went to France.
What the absolute fuck?